Hello and welcome to I Am The Egg Pod with me, Chris Shaw. The Egg Pods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. In this episode, I'm joined by journalist, TV and radio presenter, musician and animal rights campaigner, Nikki Campbell.
I love it.
Is that okay?
Oh yeah, that's what a perfect introduction.
OBE, I forgot.
Must you? I'm so excited. Thank you so much for asking me to do this.
Thank you for coming.
When I heard about it, because my friend Rachel Burden was doing it, and I thought, like, well, I want to do that. I want to sit there and talk about a Beatles album for an hour. What a joyful thing.
I know. Especially in these times.
God, do we need them?
I think in this particular week, it's been forgetting Brexit, I think the most important vote we should have at the moment is Magical Mystery Tour a real album?
It's not a real album. But I think we want to see the whole House of Commons going na 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 together.
Yes.
I saw that on television.
Wow.
When it went out.
You don't look old enough.
1968. I'm 58.
Wow.
And David Frost, I remember sitting on the carpet with my parents. It was a big event, one of those big TV events, watching it. Mm. I remember lots of things. There was a guy dressed as a bellboy. All sorts of stuff was going on. I remember Paul McCartney's shiny face.
Yeah.
And my mum said, he's the nice one.
Which is true.
Ish.
It is true. Well.
Yeah. It's a long story. And then, because this album, 33 and a third, what was it, 1976?
Yeah.
And I was 15. And yet the Beatles seemed like a millennium ago at that time. It seems so long ago.
Yeah.
And it was only 5 years since All Things Must Pass.
Yes.
And it was only 6 years since the Beatles split. Now, I think about 6 years from, I don't know, Obama.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
A lot can happen in 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah. We were members of the European Union.
I remember those days.
And we still are. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. When did you first discover the Beatles? How old were you?
I was around about 13 or 14. My sister had some cassettes, and I remember messing around one day and putting them on and listening to stuff. And I put this cassette on called With the Beatles. Of course, we knew about the Beatles. Everybody knew about the Beatles. And I pressed it, and it went, "It won't be long. It won't be long." And I fell in love.
Yeah.
And then I listened to a couple more tracks and I heard, "Close your eyes and I'll kiss you." And it touched me, just touched my heart. And from then on, it's been an absolute love affair. And the other album she had was Sgt. Pepper.
Right.
And I listened and I listened and I listened. And I'm still hearing new things.
Yes, yeah. It's difficult. We're two albums to start off with, isn't it? It's almost like two separate bands.
Yeah. It was two separate bands, two separate eras, like 50 years apart from each other. Yeah, the same magic, the same energy, and the same creativity. I was listening to Penny Lane the other day, and I was welling up, because I just thought, this is the apex of, you know, a creative imagination and a description of the hallucinogenic and the psychedelic with almost nursery rhyme-like words. And I thought, I mean, it really is genius. I know Kenneth Tynan said that Sgt. Pepper was a defining moment in Western civilization. When I picked up With the Beatles and Sgt. Pepper, that was a defining moment in my life. So I became obsessed with what they were doing now, where they were going, and there was some amazing stuff happening at that time. So from about 1974, something like that, I jumped on the Magical Mystery Tour bus and went with it, and I'm still on it.
The album you've picked is George's 1976 album, 33 and a third. Did you buy it at the time, or is it something that you picked up after?
I bought it at the time. I heard it was coming out.
Because the reason I ask, so many people we've had on here the album that they've all picked, invariably they've been 14, 15 years old. So it's all been those formative years.
Interesting.
What did it mean to you when you first heard this?
Well, from my awakening with the Beatles, I was always on the lookout, and this went on for years and years and years, always on the lookout for the magic. Was the next album going to have there's just that little bit of magic? You know, on McCartney albums, certainly over the years, and Wings albums, you can listen to it and think, oh, God, oh, okay. But then there's one.
Yes, there's always one.
There's one.
Yeah.
And you think, that is right up there. That could have been a Beatles song. Whether it could have been a Beatles song if the Beatles were together now, or it could have been a Beatles song back then if it had different arrangements, different production. And I think, unlike Extra Texture, unlike Dark Horse, I think actually Give Me Love, Give Me Peace on Earth could have been a Beatles song. Oh, but yeah. I think there are songs on here that pass the magic test.
Definitely.
I really think that there are songs on 33 and a Third that, had the Beatles still been together, would have graced a Beatles album of 1976, and had they had a different production, would have graced a Beatles album from anything from 1966 onwards.
Mm.
I think there are songs on here that would do. I don't think there's no skippers on this album.
No.
There's no. Are you a Revolution Number 9 skipper?
Never. No. I endure. No, not
endure.
I enjoy.
Both.
I used to. First time I heard it, I endured it.
Yeah.
I think, when's it going to start? Then 9 minutes later,
yeah,
it hasn't. And, oh, I love it.
And within you, without you, you're not a within you.
I don't skip anything.
No skippers for you?
Yeah.
No? Wild Honey Pie? No?
Well, there's not much to skip, is there?
No, there's not. Bear with it. But what I like about Within You, Without You, and I've been a bit of a skipper over the years, it's far more difficult to skip on cassette, though.
Yes.
Sometimes you miss it, and sometimes you get. what I love about it is how it goes from that. So I like to get the last minute if I'm in a skipping mood, because I love how it goes from that into bum 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 bum. I think it's genius juxtaposition. But anyway, this is not about that. This is about this.
Yeah.
33 and a Third. I was really excited when I heard it was coming out. I knew about all the stuff that had been going on, the My Sweet Lord court case. Mm. I knew about his health problems. He'd had hepatitis. I didn't know about the alcohol and the drugs, but I do now. I remember there was a picture of him in the newspaper in around about 1975, and he looked absolutely dreadful.
Really?
Yeah, I remember my parents saying, oh, that sort of lifestyle does for you. Yeah. And I was really worried about him. And then this came out, and it sparkles.
Absolutely.
Don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, 1976 as well, it was almost like the full stop to the Beatles, because everything was still coming out on Apple.
Mm.
So all these solo albums, it was still kind of, it's still the Beatles, they're doing their own thing, they could get back together. But this was the definite full stop. Dark Horse Records, and originally A&M co-owned by Herb Alpert. They were going to distribute, and when he got hepatitis, he was out of action for most of the summer.
Yeah.
Goodbye A&M, hello Warner Brothers. They then distributed it. But also 76 punk... This album is completely, in the way as Pepper is, it's its own time span.
I think that's why some of George's stuff has endured and has lasted, because he didn't nod to fads.
No.
Far less than Macca did. Remember Goodnight Tonight with that little disco beat going on? And I think Macca was far more attuned to thinking, what's happening now? What's the current groove? I'm going to go with that just a little bit. Mm. Not in a huge way, but he musically alluded to it.
Yeah.
Whereas I think George was oblivious to all that, because he could be quite grumpy about all this, and he did his own thing. And resultantly, I think it still doesn't sound dated.
I think also, bear in mind, most of 76, we had Neil Innes on recently, and he was saying
that
he and his wife particularly loved gardening, and she and George would just wander around Friar Park. How many, like 40 acres or something of land he's got, just talking... So I'm guessing in that that backdrop, he's not really interested in punk. He just wants to recuperate, do a bit of gardening, and then write these really uplifting, positive songs. It's kind of in the same way when he and Eric were sitting in the garden and he wrote Here Comes the Sun.
Mm.
I get the feeling the songwriting process must have been not dissimilar to that.
Perhaps. And Neil obviously spoke about Crikerbox Palace.
Yes.
The video.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those three videos for this are incredible.
Fantastic.
Aren't they great?
With Eric Idle involved as well.
The one for True Love is just bizarre. But anyway, Yeah, I was so excited when I heard this was coming out, because I was the guy who was going down to the record shop and buying Abbey Road not long after it had actually been out, you know, four or five years after it had been out.
Yeah.
And discovering it with no baggage, going to it. And the thing about the Beatles then, because they were so much integrated and woven into our national cultural psyche, that I knew the tunes.
Yes.
So many of the, I recognize them. I was like coming home to them, but they were new to me as well.
So we start with track one, Woman, Don't You Cry For Me.
Well, Woman, Don't You Cry For Me, it's great. It's a really confident start. Mm. And when you hear this, if the last George album you heard was Extra Texture, which was shrouded in grey, I thought was a great song.
Yes.
On that particular album, which I know he demoed a few years before.
Yeah. Lyrically.
Slight.
Yeah, I think there's about three words in the whole song.
There is, but sometimes it's a little bit better than the Lord loves the one who loves the Lord who loves the one who loves the Lord. So whatever. You pays your money, you takes your choice. Mm-hmm. I did like you. There's not much else on that album to be incredibly excited about. Some people rate This Guitar Can't Keep From Crying.
Mm.
I don't. I think it's kind of... It's like... I don't know, I'm just trying to think of a poor film sequel. So, you know, it was a great film, then it was a really bad two. It's a little bit like that. Why do it? So after that, and I got it for 99p from Bruce's record shop, Extra Texture. I saw it there. It was on offer and clearly hadn't done very well. And it was in the offers bin, going through the LPs, Bruce's record shop in Rose Street. And I bought it and I listened to it, and even then, you know, as a Beatles nut, I thought, you know.
I think the previous two albums are quite important in relation to this album. Dark Horse, where he'd been on tour and his voice was just shot to pieces, an Extra Texture after that. For me, why I'm so grateful that you've picked this is I've always equated 33 and a Third as the third part in the trilogy of those two albums.
No.
It's not. It's so good. And also, George Harrison, which followed this album, is probably my favourite album.
That Blow Away.
Yeah. And I've always thought, 33, that's just like a warm-up for George Harrison. And it's not. And listening to it, when you sit down and listen to the songs and where, and the backstory is quite interesting as well, it's an astonishing album, isn't it?
I think it's better than George Harrison. I think it's his best album since All Things Must Pass.
Mm.
Woman, Don't You Cry For Me. It's that lovely For You Blue slide guitar.
Yes.
I think this could have slipped on to Let It Be quite easily. It was written, I think, in the 60s.
Yeah.
Some great playing. And the bass playing on it is sublime, isn't it?
Yeah.
Willie Weeks. His bass playing. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
It's jazzy and it's growling and it's on point. And it's punchy, fantastic bass playing.
Yeah. I think Tom Scott was involved as well, wasn't he? So I think as co-producer, he made everything a lot more commercial and funky as well. It's almost like a Stevie Wonder groove to this.
Yeah, it's a good spot. Absolutely, absolutely right. But because this is the first track and you hear it after what had gone before, I actually do remember thinking, yes,
he's back.
This is great. He's back. This is a wonderful song.
Yeah,
I remember interviewing, I'm a few name dropping here, but interviewing Keith Richards a few years ago, and it was just after the Lennon song had come out, Free as a Bird, where they got Lennon, which I loved, actually.
Yeah.
I loved that. And Keith was saying, I saw Farmer George the other day, and I was talking about this song they've done. And I said, you know what? Leave my coffin alone. When I'm gone, leave my coffin alone. So he wasn't much enamoured with the concept of taking a dead man's voice. But I love the way he called him Farmer George, which ties in with that 40 acres. And
yeah. Yeah.
The names for each other. Well, Farmer George, isn't that great?
Perfect. Well, on the front cover of All Things Must Pass, isn't he? He looks like a farmer from Trumpton or something like that.
He's 58 when he died.
I know.
I'm 58.
I know. I wouldn't have guessed, but you'd have
told me. No, but it just puts everything into perspective, doesn't it? And context. Yeah. So he was 33 and a third and I was 15, so I wasn't far off being twice his he wasn't far off from being twice my age. And it's just weird.
1976, you forget the whole of the Beatles, then All Things Must Pass, Lennon's doing Plastic Ono Band, all the stuff in New York City, Ringo's movie. And so much had happened, and he was still only 33 in 1976. It's quite astonishing, isn't it?
It really is.
He really was the baby of the band.
And he seems so old.
Yeah.
When I was 15.
Yes.
33.
Let's not talk about this anymore.
Suck the marrow out of life. Seize the day. But it's an earworm, this one, isn't it?
Absolutely.
This is an earwormery.
This
album.
It is.
But this one, bam, 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 bam. And an interesting sort of time signatures going on too.
Yes, he does play around.
Nice little pauses and then coming back in. Beautiful drums. Mm. Great band. He could have toured with this band, couldn't he?
Yeah. I think he was put off from touring pretty well after.
Yeah.
The 74 tour, isn't he?
But it was a great set of songs to tour. But yeah, that's a great start.
Track two, Dear One. Strangely reminds me of The Inner Light, orally.
Yes.
Don't know why.
And there's a four chord sequence, which is a kind of Dear Prudence structure, except it doesn't go. It goes, for sake of argument, C, C7, F, G major.
Yes.
Whereas a Dear Prudence would have C, C7, F, F minor, right? Mm. I mean, there's no rip-off thing going on here, but it's just the intro to the four chord sequence, which is nice.
Yeah.
It works well. It's the most spiritual one on here, isn't it?
Yeah. For some reason, it also reminds me of Smiley Smile, the Beach Boys album. And in the chorus, you've got this, it shouldn't work, but it sounds so good with this sort of jaunty little synthesized break that he's doing. I think George
boom,
played
boom, 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 boom. It's something like that going on, isn't it? It's a nice chorus, and when it kicks up, it's really nice, isn't it? I looked into this guy. Apparently, it's about Paramahansa Yogananda.
Thank you.
You know this geezer at all?
I know him. I can't pronounce him, though.
Yeah. He published, just for people who don't know, and I didn't, he published this book, Autobiography of a Yogi, in 1946, which is massive, one of the best spiritual books of the 20th century, apparently. But he wouldn't be a yogi without, you know, follow the money. Mm. A bit of stuff going on, you know. Let's have a look. Where are the Rolls Royces and all that stuff? And so, apparently, before his death, he was accused of holding a harem of young women in a dorm next to his room. Rude not to. Accusations there. So I thought, yes, Sexy Sadie is back.
Maharishi's back again.
Bit of Sexy Sadie about it. You know?
Yeah.
Which bespeaks, you know, spirituality and perhaps naivety, but naivety has its charm, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
I mean, I might be completely wrong about this guy, but that was written about him. And don't worry, by the way, you can't libel the dead.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of gurus, Alan Klein included, the Maharishi.
Yeah.
John particularly, but I think George, similar, they're always looking for this sort of father figure.
Yeah, it's interesting that, career, yes. Isn't it? And mother figure too.
And they usually let them down in the Beatles story pretty well every time. But
it's a good song.
Again, it's 1976, The Damned are releasing New Rose, and punk is happening.
Yeah.
And this is a million miles away, but I'm quite happy to sit in that room.
Yeah, but I was twin track. I was Beatles and punk and New Wave, because the great stuff that came out of punk and New Wave were the great songs. And I just love great songs. And they don't get greater than Beatles songs. When inspirationally, when it comes to crafted songs, when it comes to something which, with respect to George, transcends. And likewise, punk. I thought, you know, Pretty Vacant was one of the greatest rock and roll songs I've ever heard.
Yeah.
So, and all that, when Nick Lowe and Elvis Costello came out, then of course it all joined up and Flowers in the Dirt. So I didn't demarcate at all. It was all, for me, fantastic. So one weekend I'd pogo, and the other weekend I'd cross my legs and light the incense. Sometimes at the same time.
What an image.
Yeah.
Bouncing along in a... Yeah.
Wow. In a caftan. A Union Jack caftan. Yeah.
Track 3, Beautiful Girl. And this is another old song George initially wrote in 69, initially for Patty, but by the time he finished it, it was about Olivia.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice song. Really nice song. Really great hook. Good feel. There's a couple of lyrical things in there that I'd switch. There's a hashtag Me Too moment. She's not the kind of... She's a beautiful girl, not the kind you go handing around.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
We'll do that again. Yeah. Write it differently now.
Yeah.
Different times. Different I'm sympathetic times. To the are different times argument to an extent. I think that's kind of okay. We understand where you where you were coming from, what you mean. And maybe sometimes George's lyrics are great. Sometimes they go a little bit awry. So, actually, same with all of them.
I think gone through Rubber Soul, that's pretty good, actually.
It's pretty good. So maybe it's a vestige of life on the road. I don't know. But and also, she was A1, as in A and as in the number one. Because when I was a kid, used to think she was a one.
Yeah.
Oh, she was a one.
She's a one.
She's a one.
So you see Les Dawson.
Oh, well, yeah, exactly. Right. She's Ronnie one. Charlie Hawtrey. You know. But she was a one.
Yeah.
But a lovely... It's not my favourite on the album by any extent, but it's not a skipper.
No. It's sort of, for me... there was a demo he did just on acoustic guitar back in 69, 70. And the version on here, there's nothing been changed in all those years. So it's strange how he sort of sat on it for all those years, which he's done a number of times on this. He's done it on a few tracks on here, but he also did it on George Harrison with Not Guilty from the White Album. And even Gone Troppo, he did Circles, which was back in 67. So it's bizarre how he had all these songs sitting away that were great songs. But, yeah, weird how it took him 10 years to actually get them out into the public. But.
So they were squeezed out because the others only had a certain quota of George songs.
Yeah.
But also, I think that one can reimagine these songs as Beatles songs with a George Martin production within the feel of some of those albums, particularly a couple that we're going to come to. And that's the magic of this. It's the first George album, as I say, for a while that you think, yeah, the magic's there, because my life was waiting for the magic. And then with this album, magic came along in spades.
For this song. Now, as backstories go, this song has got quite a good
one. It has. It's a meta.
It is.
Song, isn't it?
It is.
It's not just a meta and it's a song about songs. It's a meta song because it's a song about a song that was somebody else's song.
Yeah.
So it's kind of meta, meta, meta.
Yeah. Meta made. I'll be here all week.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, the My Sweet Lord saga. That lovely minor major thrum. When you hear that My Sweet Lord intro, it's every time I tingle. And the whole build up. And I think he was unlucky.
I do, yeah.
He's so fine. My Sweet Lord. Three Blind Mice.
Yeah.
Oh, Happy Day.
Oh, Happy Day.
All that. He lost $6 million over it or something,
he
didn't
did. He? Lost. Yeah. It was ridiculous. Oh, Happy Day. He himself said, Oh, Happy Day. You know, if you're going to do me for anything, do me for Oh, Happy Day. Oh Happy Day was a mid-18th century song by English clergyman Philip Doddridge.
Oh, Philip Doddridge was on it, wasn't he?
He was. So Philip Doddridge.
Oh, Doddridge Jesus family walks. Oh, happy day. That's, what a groove.
Yeah.
Phil could groove, couldn't he?
He could, he could. And based on Acts 8:35, where Philip meets the eunuch and tells him the good news. So I think the Doddridge family could be onto something here 200 years down the...
Copyright goes, doesn't it, after a certain amount of time?
But they can get on their moral high ground, if nothing else, can't they?
Be a great who do you think you are?
Yeah.
Do you realise Philip Doddridge you're related to? It's fascinating, this. The whole court crate. And the lyrics as well, because he's so fine. Was that bright music?
Yes.
This song, there's nothing bright about it. I remember sitting in the kitchen, having my cup of tea, about to go to school, 15 years old, and that exciting moment, the charts meant everything. Who's doing well on the charts, who's not doing so well on the charts? And wanting the records that you love to shoot up the charts, to get into the charts.
Yeah.
And I remember Noel Edmonds on the Radio 1 Breakfast Show saying, here's the new single from George Harrison. And it's great. It's beautifully
produced.
It's like
getting on almost, that riff.
It's sugar pie, honey bun. That's what Eric Idle references that, doesn't he, in the song? And it's really tight. It's really powerful. It's really well produced. I really, really like this song. A couple of things. As a song about songs, I hate songs about songs. It's just too meta. But as a song about songs, as songs about songs go, this song is a great song about songs, being a song about a song that was actually another song.
Called this song.
And also he goes through the fourth wall, as we say in the theatrical business, darling. He goes through the fourth wall at the end, doesn't he? And I've never heard him do that before. I could be wrong, but I've never heard him do that before, and I never heard him do it since. After all the shenanigans and the fun and the taking the mickey, the payoff, this song could well be a reason to see that without you there's no point to this song. He's speaking to the listener. He's speaking to us. You clock that, right?
Yeah.
You clock everything.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You clock everything. I can tell you nothing new.
I have to.
You are my Paramahansa Yogananda.
Thank you.
Creation stands at your feet. You know everything. I can't tell you. I can tell you nothing new. But that just always occurred to me. It's a very warm, inviting and embracing part of the song. This song, and it comes back, because he says it, then his instrumental break, then it comes back again. This song could well be reason to see that. And there's Beatley singing on it.
Yes.
Without you, there's no one to this song. I love it.
Lovely.
I love it.
I'm going to overdub some guitar on that.
Of this song. Good harmonies.
Yeah.
Motown inspired, like You, which was on an extra texture read all about it.
Yeah.
So a similar inspiration. He loves that soul music. And I love it. Warm, wonderful tune, which wasn't actually a hit, but I think deserved to be a hit. Maybe some people thought it was, you know, self-indulgent. I didn't. I thought he gave it to the world. Did you like it?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Sorry, I'm just pausing for a moment. Somehow, I don't know what I've pressed, I've deleted all of my notes. Hence the iPhone.
You know everything.
Right, this is a challenge.
But we've been recording, right?
Yeah.
So,
how did I do
you
that?
You could have said, I've deleted everything we've recorded, but you haven't done that, have you?
No.
No.
Oh, hang on, undo.
Undo.
Thank you, God.
Undo
if you shake the phone,
it
gives you the option to undo.
Undo is the...
Delete everything.
Undo is the key to everything.
Oh, man. Oh, it's so good.
But I hear this song and I think, George, you're so fine. I think, oh, happy day. It makes me feel happy.
It is. It's such an uplifting... And I love also from...
But it's bitter.
It is bitter, but it's got a sense of humour.
Yeah.
I think we were saying earlier, living in the material world is a bit preachy.
And
there's not that much humour in it.
Right.
And we know what happened afterwards, and especially with Eric Idle's involvement in this as well. We know they went on to work with Handmade Films. But having Eric Idle doing the pure Monty Python voice in a George Harrison song, it suddenly you haven't heard that before.
He was in the Ruffles, though, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Because everyone was stealing everything from Apple.
That's it,
and yeah. And he was in the background taking stuff out.
He was interviewing...
That's right!
Michael Palin.
He was interviewing Michael Palin as people were nicking stuff in the background.
I'm just wondering.
That's right. Yeah. It's all coming back to me.
Yes. So his humour, he could have been really embarrassed about being sued by Bright Music, but he didn't. He released this song, and it's a real piss take.
It's tongue-in-cheek bitter. Oh,
absolutely. It's such a groovy song.
This song,
he's won that. Forget all the court cases. He's won the song wars.
Yes, it's a really, really good song. And I, as I say, I love the end of it as well. Oh, but yeah. when Eric Idle says, could be Sugar Pie Honey Bunch, nah, sounds more like Rescue Me. Yeah.
Superb.
Rescue me. This song, there's that nexus with the Pythons. I don't know if there's that first connection, because, of course, they were messing around making the videos for...
Yes. Well, Eric Idle was doing the videos as well for two or three songs on this as well. From then on, handmade films started, and it was the beginning of the whole new career for George, wasn't it, really, from this?
Another point. As far as songs about songs go, are there any other Beatles songs about songs? Glass Onion, I guess.
Only a Northern Song.
Only a Northern Song. Glass Onion, would that qualify as a song about songs, or is it a song just with reference to other songs, not so much about...
It mentions Fool on the Hill, and Savoy Truffle mentions Obladi-Bladar.
Yeah, it does, yeah. Savoy Truffle, yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of a throwaway little lines, aren't they? But this song...
is about a song.
Is
as it were.
We're getting into this.
There is another Beatles solo album song about songs, or about itself being a song. From Ringo's Rotogravure, there's a song written by Eric Clapton for Ringo called This Be a Song.
Ah, oh, okay.
And it's absolutely awful. I think it is possibly the nadir, that really? Particular track, the nadir of the Beatles' solo projects.
Wow.
And there have been some low points, glorious high points, but there have been some low points as well. This Be a Song. It's difficult. I tried to listen to it on iTunes the other day, but iTunes don't have it.
Do they?
Ringo's
not?
Rotogravure.
Yeah.
Mysteriously.
There was a free little magnifying glass.
Was there?
The album, yeah.
Do you have it?
Not the magnifying glass, unfortunately.
You've got the album?
I've got the album.
And what do you think of it? Are you pleased I didn't pick it?
The last time I played it was probably when I bought it about 20 years ago. I think it's got Cooking in the Kitchen of Love.
Cooking in the Kitchen of Love.
It's the last musical contribution of Lennon before 1980, when he came back with Double Fantasy.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I think, pretty well the only song I listen to.
Throwaway. There's a McCartney song with Paul and Linda McCartney. Oh, yeah. Pure Gold.
Oh, yes.
Which is quite nice.
Yeah.
There's another old-time type of song called You Say You Love Me. But you don't know me at all. It's got that vibe, that kind of American-y.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, schmaltzy.
Yeah, but kind of okay. But that's about it. Well, there's that George song, isn't it? I'll Still Love You.
Oh, yes.
You Say You Love Me is actually, it's more like a sort of pub sing-along song, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, This Be a Song, the Eric Clapton song about the song, is the only one I can think of in the solo years. But this song is a triumph. And if anyone hasn't heard it, who's listening to this, never mind the whole album, it's enough of this song.
It is.
Though, funnily enough, it's not one of the ones I would have thought qualified to be a Beatles song. Because it's too particular to George and to George's specific circumstances and life and that whole court case. And although it's a song that involves the listener in a very beautiful way, a very moving way, this song, after everything I've been through and all that stuff, it could be, maybe this song is going to be another weight to bear, he says. But then, you know, the reason for this song, it could well be a reason to see that without you, there's no point to this song. I think that's just such a giving, generous, involving, embracing line. I find it quite moving.
David Quantick, who'd been on before, he made an interesting point. A lot of George Beatles songs are effectively solo George songs. John and Paul's songs tend to be a band effort. But George's ones, I guess it's similar in the way that Eric Idle was writing for Python.
Yeah.
His sketches are Eric Idle sketches. And there's very few, I think, Something and Here Comes the Sun, obviously very Beatly.
Who are the backing vocals on Something?
Paul.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a lovely thing on YouTube with just Paul and George singing. And Paul does a lot more than you actually hear on the record. Absolutely beautiful.
Because there's a period in the Beatles that you can't... They're so together. On Sgt. Pepper, they all sound the same. You can't tell which is which.
Yeah.
They just come together in a wonderful, magical, musical melee.
Mm.
A mélange. And it's beautiful. And it's just them so much as a unit. There are parts of and points in Sgt. Pepper that I completely like that. I was discussing this with your previous guest, Ms. Rachel Burden, before, and I said, who's singing that bit? You can't tell who's singing that bit.
Yeah.
And that's wonderful.
Track 5, See Yourself.
Ah.
Talking of 1967.
Yeah, I think this could be on a Beatles album. Mm. I can hear it in black and white. Glorious, wonderful monochrome. Post-Revolver, but still, I think it's better than some George songs on the White album.
Wow.
Am I sticking my neck out here? I'm putting my head on the chopping block. I just think that it could be on the White Album. It could be on Let It Be. Mm. It wouldn't fit on Abbey Road. It would be different. There would be a Beatles production. But imagine it with, if everyone was involved, imagine John and Paul on backing vocals.
Yeah.
And a different musical arrangement. Maybe even a different time signature. I don't know, because it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I think it's 9/8 or something.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. And they go, dun, 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 see yourself. So it goes into a more conventional musical framework. Is it just me? I think there's a... I think it's Lennon-esque, too. Because it's Lennon-esque, I'm hearing the rest of them.
Well, a lot of these songs, when you discover that... As I say, there's quite a few tracks on this album that were written in 67 up to 69. You can't help but... What would they have done? That song.
They would have made this song.
Yeah.
It's good here, but they would have made it super good. And he sings it quite Lennon-y. I can't do it, but there's a kind of nasal Lennon-y kind of glide to some of the singing, which is very Beatly.
Lyrics are about Paul admitting he'd taken LSD, and I think in the liner notes, George, which he always brought up, it was always, yeah, but we were taking it 2 years before. He always makes the point of, okay, well done, George, good for you.
Yeah, well done, Paul. Yeah,
but yeah, I think Paul's the hero, you know.
Yeah,
he held back
so holding back on the trifle. Let everybody else have some first, right?
Just a spoonful, lads.
Yeah, yeah. So, do you like it?
Oh, I do, yeah. I think it's very...
Do you think I'm going a bit OTT on it?
No, not at all. I mean, it's all subjective. The thing doing this, you tracks that I never really considered before, people highlight things. And I've never thought about it. A guy called Dan Revelato did Let It Be, and I've always, talking about skipping, I have to be honest, Long and Winding Road.
You're a skipper of Long and Winding Road?
I used to be.
The Spectre production.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The cleaner one's good.
Yeah. It's a heartbreaking piece of music when you think when it was written and what was going on with Paul at the time and how it never stays on the tonic. It's always, it never quite, there's a restlessness about it. And yeah, it just opens up. And the same with this song. It's, again, listen to the whole album. The whole thing's just opened up to me. I think doing this just does something. I know a lot of people who listen to this. Listen to the ones that they haven't got, then go out and spread them. So,
well, I'd love if people were to discover or rediscover this album because it is so worth it. And as you said earlier on, it's such a crucial time in George's life. And it really is that moment sitting in the back garden with Eric Clapton when the sun comes out. Mm. The sun comes out for this album. And his eyes are sparkling and he's smiling. And it's really transporting, really moving and beautiful. But there we are. See Yourself. Let It Be. Could have been on Let It Be, couldn't it? I wonder if they'll ever release that film.
They are. Isn't Peter Jackson
are they
doing it? Yeah. They're going to re-edit it to make it...
Nicer. They're taking out the argument.
I don't see how they can, but I think there's a lot more. I know Mark Lewisohn sat through, you know, all the bootlegs you can get. I think he sat through every day of January, and he said, we've all got it wrong. There were a few arguments, but they were getting on as good as they had done for the whole of the 60s. And the same thing, Peter Jackson, he's got access to all the footage they're going to release since 2020. It's going to be a different film, and it's going to be, as you said, a lot more uplifting, highlighting all the fun that they were having.
Oh, fantastic.
I can't wait to see that.
And they'll clean it all up, because Peter Jackson is the master of cleaning things up.
Yeah.
Making things look good, but they've got to keep that argument between Paul and George in.
I know.
That's a moment in history.
Absolutely.
I'll play what you want me to play, and if you don't want me to play, I won't play. Maybe I'm just trying to help you.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to help you.
This is very much what we talk about when during the washing up, isn't it? I think, yeah, maybe if they do keep that in the context of a whole lot more fun, we can see, yeah, actually, yeah, they had that argument, but that was 10 minutes in one day, you know.
I tell you what, you could edit my marriage. I'm very happily married. And my wife is, she's my soulmate, and she's my best friend. But we have a couple of humdingers every year. Maybe one a year, maybe twice a year. You can edit that. And it would look, we'd look like Burton and Taylor at their worst. So it's all about the editing.
Yeah.
Michael Lindsay?
Hogg.
He was the director, right?
Yes.
Did he have an agenda?
I don't think he had an agenda. I think it was just so chaotic that there was so much film. Mm. And, I mean, the album itself was... Phil Spector ended up with Glyn Johns.
Who was involved with the Eagles.
Yes. Yeah. But he did a rough mix. And he, from all those hundreds of songs, he picked those. And Phil Spector was then given the job. And rather than go through everything, he just, work with what Glyn had picked. Mm. So you Don't Let Me Down, that's not on the album.
Don't Let Me Down's not on the album?
No.
My brain's gone.
It was on the B-side of B-side, Get Back.
Yeah, but you think it's on the album.
You do. It's not there.
Dig It is on there.
Dig It's on there. Maggie May's on there.
But Don't Let Me Down's not on there. But then they did that new order of it, didn't they?
Let It Be Naked.
Yeah, do you like that?
I do, yeah. I kind of prefer that version to the original Let It Be.
Yeah.
Each to their own.
This is why this is so interesting. There'll be lots of people listening to this thinking, what is he talking about?
Absolutely.
See Yourself, a Beatles song. The guy's talking through his backside. No, listen to it. Imagine it. Reimagine it. Black and white. Beatles. Lennon. Oh, backing vocals. Bosch.
Moving over to side two.
Yeah.
And we start with It's What You Value.
Great drumming. Great drum sound.
Mm.
Alvin Taylor.
Yes.
It sounds like a guy who can play drums playing drums. It's very catchy. It's not my favourite, but it is very catchy. And re-listening to the album, I found it earworming its way into my consciousness. Mm. I'm always slightly reticent to completely engage with songs about motor cars.
Yeah.
For me, cars are about getting from A to B.
Yeah.
I don't have that kind of Clarkson fixation about cars.
No.
In any way, shape or form. But the tight drum sound is wonderful because it sounds real.
Mm.
And so much drum stuff now is, it's kind of EQ'd to within an inch of its life. Mm. Wasn't it about Jim Keltner, this song?
It was, yeah, during the Dark Horse tour. He declined payment. Just said, I'll give us a Mercedes. Fine, okay. Samira Ahmed was on one of the podcasts talking about a sports presenter who went to interview George, and he was very excited. It was like, wow, you know, I'm in George's house. George, again, on the 1979 album, he did Faster.
Yeah.
Obviously about Manchester. But George pulled him in and said, right, come here, I've written this song. And he played him this song, and it was about Damon Hill. He'd written a song about Damon Hill.
Fool on the Damon Hill.
Very good.
Or Damon Tripper? No. he said it's the worst song he'd ever heard.
Oh, really?
And thankfully, George didn't release it. But yeah, his obsession with cars. Again, I guess it's sort of his recuperation period. He's at home gardening, watching motor racing.
But also there's a real dichotomy, again, which I like, because the dichotomy is part of the complexity of George as a human being. And, you know, I far prefer complex human beings in general to, you know, straight down, because he's interesting. Mm. And on the one hand, there's this spiritual guy singing to his guru, and then he's getting into a car and roaring off.
Yeah.
And it's interesting the debate that would be now about that, given emissions. So on one hand, he'd be spiritual, on the other hand, he'd be doing all these emissions. So it's interesting. Someone's driving a 450, and I'm just immediately thinking, yeah, and your point is?
Yeah. It's sort of like those early Beach Boys songs, where I have no idea what they're talking about. Well, is that a car, or is that a...
Yeah, and so then he says, and they're still in the stick shifties. I think it's a gear. A stick shift is a gear.
Is it?
So what's a...
Oh, my wife's nodding.
A stick shifty.
What's a stick shifty?
It rhymes... a stick...
Oh, does it rhyme?
A stick shifty is something that rhymes with 50.
Oh, okay, right.
It's nifty. They should have said nifty, couldn't he?
Swifty.
But there we are. But... you know, the production's great, the playing is great, and the harmonies are really good when all the voices come together.
Yeah.
So again, it's not a skipper. It's not my favourite, but it's not a skipper. Mm. Where do you rank it in the album?
For me...
You're with me on this a bit.
I think I love a lot of the songs on this, but I like this one, I'd say.
Yeah, it's not I'm with you on that.
One for me. But one thing, again, we were saying about the harmonies, George's voice, you think Dark Horse only a couple of years ago.
It's great.
His voice is so rich on this. It's really got it together. Really,
really well sung, isn't it?
Track two, on side two, True Love.
I am fascinated to know what you think about this, but I'll say my piece first. I remember on the radio being released, I remember thinking, what I liked about it and what I continue to like about it is that he sounds happy. And if he's happy, I'm happy. There was a big hit a couple of years before this of another Cole Porter song, Gary Shurston, I Get a Kick Out of You.
Oh, yes.
Big, massive hit.
Yes.
But he did remember, I Get No Kick From Champagne. Died quite recently, I think, Gary. Last couple of years. That's a really beautiful, characterful version of a Cole Porter song within the context of the pop era. You know, this guy with the long hair singing it. And this, I would have done it differently. For me, it's too... slide guitar-y and frantic on that front. I'd love to have heard him do this song because he clearly loves the song.
Yes.
And he gives it everything. And it's joyous. But I'd love to have heard him do this song in a kind of more Gary Shurston-like way with more of an acoustic backing and a nice bit of Alvin on the drums and Willie doing a nice, I don't know, not necessarily an upright bass, but a nice... generic, by generic I mean within the genre,
yeah,
bass line. I have no objections to it. I listened to it. I'd like to have had strings on it as well. And because of his love of the song, I think that could have all worked beautifully. Mm. Do you like it?
I do.
It's warm, isn't it?
It is. It's. I mean, George's comment himself. Again, I love George. It's a bit slow the way Bing does it. So, yeah, do it a bit faster. But that was kind of... It's his sound, isn't it? You've got the slide guitar, the very... the diminished chords, I think.
Anything he loves a diminished chord.
He does.
This is the thing about George, that I was absolutely going to say that. This gives him a chance to do diminished chords.
Big time.
That
all the
work
for it.
Really, really well.
Yeah.
Because George... His default position sometimes in his songwriting is go for the diminished, isn't it? And he thinks that's a kind of... You think it's going somewhere else. And yeah. I think George sometimes falls prey to the temptation to do that because he thinks it's unpredictable. So that very unpredictability of going to the diminished chord in some of George's songs becomes predictable. Mm. So the unpredictability is predictable because you know he's going to do it. And sometimes with George's songs, and who am I to criticise George Harrison as a songwriter? This is ridiculous. But if we're being critics, in some of George's songs, I sometimes think that were he to take a more conventional route through, he draws us in more. And it can still be a beautiful song, it can still be an original song, but it can still be G, E minor, A minor, D. Mm. And he achieves that, for example, on Blow Away.
Yes. Yeah.
There's no tricksome diminished chords on that. Mm. It's pure and simple pop and roll, rock and roll. Mm. And you love it because it says to you, you know me and you like me. Yeah. Let me take you to a new place, but you still know who I am.
Yeah. That's, I mean, as chords go...
Do I make sense?
You do. I'm thinking that's a very welcoming song, or the chord structure is very welcoming. Anything with a diminished chording can be a bit prickly. Is that the right word? But in the context of True Love and the original, or was the Bing Crosby version...
Cole Porter was a writer of songs.
Yeah.
He's one of the great melodists of the 20th century. I'd say, goodness me, if I was to pick five melodists in the 20th century, and four of these were named by Andrew Lloyd Webber to me when I asked him who are the great melodists of the 20th century. Andrew Lloyd Webber said Richard Rodgers, Gershwin, Puccini and McCartney. And I would add Cole Porter to that list. I'd take it to the top five. Now, I tweeted that recently, that Andrew Lloyd Webber said that to me. And people tweeted back, said, what about Lennon? What about these songs? Yeah. What about Dylan? I said, I didn't say songwriter. He said melodist, which is completely different. Well, you know what I mean? It's not completely different, but Bob Dylan is one of the great songwriters, but he's not one of the great
melody.
He's not one of the great melodists of the 20th century.
You couldn't really whistle Subterranean Homesick Blues.
Well, yeah, but I'm just talking about up there, the very best, the very best of the best of the best.
Yeah.
And Lennon is peerless as a songwriter, but he's nowhere near the best melodist in the 20th century. So that's what that was very specific. But anyway, I would add very much Cole Porter to that. Cole Porter is an incredible songwriter, an incredible lyricist, and if anyone knows how to use a diminished chord, or a major ninth or whatever, it's Cole Porter. He knows that stuff, and I think George would have really appreciated using those chords because he uses them quite a lot, sometimes to good effect, sometimes to not such a good effect. The singing, Cole Porter always used to berate Frank Sinatra for the way he sang his lyrics. She got the cool, cuckoo, wonderful, groovy wind in her hair. She's got a life without care. You know what? She's broke, but that's oak. Whereas Cole liked it. Mm. She's got the cool, fresh wind in her hair. Life without care. But Sinatra took liberties.
Yes.
And I just wonder what Cole Porter would think about true love. True love. I'm sorry about that, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not sure Cole would approve, but who cares about Cole?
Yeah. That's sort of veering into Whitney Houston territory there.
True love. Yeah. There's a bit of that, isn't there?
Yeah.
But it's got a great, what Cole Porter would never have called, middle eight.
Yes.
for you and I have a guardian angel. And it's one of the great harmonies. If you fancy singing it with the missus.
Yeah.
For you and I have a guardian angel for you and I. Yeah, it's great. I can't do it now, but it's a beautiful. And he does it. There's some really standout points in the song. When he falls to the minor at the end.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And he falls to the minor again. I think he falls to the minor twice before he resolves. And he's loving it. He is. I said it on, because he's loving it, I'm loving it.
There's no pretension to it.
No.
If you're going to do this song, you either do it, a huge orchestra backing you, or you just, I think he just went in the studio, did it, there's some diminished chords in there, that'll do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's that much thought behind it, but then it was a single, wasn't it?
So see. Didn't do very well, though, did it?
No, none of the singles really did well over here. I think he had more success in America, but we do get those lovely Eric Idle videos. Pure Smokey.
Not my favourite, Pure Smokey, but again, I listen and enjoy. And when I say it's not my favourite, this is all relative. I love all the songs on this album. Mm-hmm. Pure Smokey, it's his second Smokey tribute, right? He did one on Extra Texture, didn't he?
Ooh, Baby.
Ooh, Baby.
You Know That I Love You.
Right, yeah. So, you know, he's not going to do Pure Cliff, is he? But Ooh, Justin.
You know, not gonna work,
not
is it?
Really. Pure Justin.
Yeah.
No, it's
ooh,
not. You
gotta... Ooh, BB. Bieber. No, forget
it. Pure. My only thing is that if you're going to do a tribute song about Smokey Robinson, you're never going to sing it as well as Smokey Robinson's going to sing it. I mean, I wouldn't do Pure Luciano, you know. That's not going
to
work. It's not going to happen. There is that. But his love comes through.
Yes.
But there is a paradox if you're doing a song about an amazing singer and your singing is not amazing as an amazing singer. I love the reference to You Really Got a Hold on Me.
Yes. Yeah.
With the Beatles, of course. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
And it's a fixation of his. Mm. Why did Smokey Robinson never record any of these songs? Possibly because they're about him, but he could have...
It comes across quite big-headed, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's a bit Alan Partridge.
Oh, a song about yourself.
Having or a people huge that, tattoo of yourself.
Or people that refer to themselves in the third person.
Yeah.
That.
I love George's comment about this. He was saying, if I like someone, I want to say, I like you. I don't want to die and then to think, oh, I forgot to tell them I like them. So he's done this twice now. He adores Smokey Robinson.
Yeah.
The name of the song is actually a Smokey Robinson album. It's called Pure Smokey.
Yeah.
Okay. That'll do.
What is gorgeous about this song is the guitar solo. I think it's one of his best guitar solos.
Very understated as well, isn't it?
But when I say, I've got to say again that if I say this is not one of my favourites, I still love it. I really love every song on this album.
Mm.
So we're being ultra pickety, nickety, picky.
Yeah.
Nitpickingly picky and nickety. Nicky picky. Nicky picky.
Nicky Campbell.
Nicky picky.
Nickety Campbell. I'm hearing a lot of Steely Dan in this as well. I think he was influenced by a lot of the sort of FM kind of stuff around at the time.
Jazzy chords.
Yeah. And his voice is perfect because he's got this... His voice is back to his full strength as well, and it just really complements the songs. And, I love this one. I think it's a fine piece of music.
It is. It is a fine piece of music. I'm realising now that I like it a lot more than it sounded like just a couple of moments ago, because I was in a groove of saying, well, that song there.
Oh, we it's can. Easy to do, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think we were coming out of True Love, which I also like, you know, and I was coming out of that, and I had the mindset of criticism.
Yeah.
This is a great song. He does it really well. It's not my number one song on the album, but it's beautiful.
Yeah. Doing this, you do fight. You're working from perfection.
Mm.
So if you nitpick, it's only a bit.
I know. But you hear yourself doing it, don't you?
Yeah, I know.
And you think, who am I? What right have I got to do this? Absolutely. But standing back, you know, we can see the texture.
Yeah.
The extra texture of all these. And the context.
I was so young when I was born. My eyes could not yet see. And by the time my first dawn, somebody holding me. They said, I welcome you to Crackerpot's Palace. We've been expecting you. You bring such joy in Crackerpot's Palace. Oh, man, where you roam, no one love is true.
Crackerpot's Palace.
Beatles song.
Yep. What album would this have been on?
It could have been on Abbey Road. Could have been on the White Album. Would have been one of the best songs on the White Album. I think it's insanely good. What I love about it is the first verse. I was so young when I was born, my eyes could not yet see. And by the time of my first dawn, somebody holding me, whatever, say, welcome you to Crackerpot's Palace. And I love that idea of the world, this mystifying, terrifying, beautiful, glorious adventure of life that we're all in, being a Crackerpot's Palace.
Yeah.
And he's right. It's unfathomable. It's joyous. It's painful. It's tragic. It's magical. It's melancholic. It's mystical. It's... We'll never get a handle on it. It's a Crackerpot's Palace.
Mm.
Welcome to this Crackerpot's Palace.
Yeah.
I think it's a glorious song. And when I used to put together, when I was younger, sort of fantasy Beatle albums, this was always on it. I think I did a couple, but this was on both of them. The best tracks of the solo years. Crackerpot's Palace.
Yeah.
Do you think there are people listening now who don't know Crackerpot's Palace? Because I mentioned to Rachel Burden, who did this wonderful podcast a while ago, she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm doing 33 and a third. She went, oh, yeah. I said, what's on that? She said, what's on that? I said, Crackerpot's Palace. She said, how does that go?
Rachel. Terrible.
No, it's forgivable because it's quite, when you get into mid-70s George stuff, she's a Beatles devotee, but you know, yeah. I forgive her for that.
Looking through this, would that be the track, if somebody said, right, this album, oh, what's on it? There wouldn't be many, the average sort of Beatles fan, I'd say, even this song, I would always say, is the most recognisable song, but not that many people have heard it. That's the thing, do you have to be a Beatles fan to enjoy this album, or could you just come in from nowhere and enjoy it? I don't know.
That's a really interesting question. I think that certain songs on this album absolutely stand on their own. Crackerpot's Palace being at the top of the heap. You could hear the Crackerpot's Palace and think, wow, that's a great song. It's an interesting song. It's lyrically interesting. It's philosophically interesting. And because of that, it's very beautiful. And it's enigmatic. And it's got a great tune. And it's really well played. And he sings it. His singing on it is top notch, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was so young when I was born. He's loving it.
Yeah. There's a bit of cheekiness to the vocals as well. The chords to the verse, for some reason, always remind me of Dylan's Knocking on Heaven's Door.
I don't think there's a court case in it.
No. Oh, let's not start that again. Sorry, George. Because the story behind it, it was George Grief. Is it George Grief?
Grief.
Grief.
That's all a part of life.
Yes.
I met a Mr. Grief. I'm presuming it's Grief because of that. Because he was Lord Buckley, some comedian, of whom I've never heard.
No, same here.
Some eccentric, wild, roustabout 50s American comedian.
Yeah.
Some decadent chap. And Mr. Grief was his manager, and I think his house was called Crackerpot's Palace.
Yes.
But it's like it's about that. It's not about that.
No.
Ted Robbins is a dear friend of mine, Kate's brother. Worked with him over the years so much. I love Ted. I love Ted more than my own family. And Ted said, and Kate said, Teddy Boy is about Ted.
Is it now? I didn't know that.
Teddy Boy, because the family.
Teddy Robbins.
Yeah. And so when I interviewed Paul once, I said, so Ted Robbins is a friend of mine, right, your cousin, Teddy Boy, it's about Ted, right? And he went, well, It is and it isn't. Because you get an idea for a song, and it's not necessarily about that. It is not about a fat comedian. I got the starting point, Ted, and so it's like, so with every respect, yeah. Ted, who's looking fit as a butcher's dog at the moment after his problems. I love the guy. So when you say it's about, it's not about that. It's a starting point. It's an inspiration. But the rest of the song, is not. So it's the same thing with Crackerbox Paris. It's not about Mr. Greif or Lord Buckley.
No.
Although we use it in the last verse because it's a nice tie-in.
Yeah.
Didn't know that. That's a story you didn't know. A Beatles story you didn't know.
I know. I did have no idea.
Do you know the Sgt. Pepper one when I was doing the interview with Giles Martin talking about the Sgt. Pepper remix? He said, do you know there's a mistake in this album that very few people have noticed? I said, where is it? What is the mistake? He said, every time I hear it when the remix, I hear it, it comes out of me and whacks me over the face. There's genuinely a mistake. And I said, why do you fix it? He said, no point in fixing it, it's there. And I said, what is it? And he went, I'm not telling you.
It'll ruin it for you.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
I mean, that is really great. Do you have a theory?
I'm thinking at the end of a day in the life, you've got a few chairs creaking.
No, that's good. Like that. I think he's talking about a musical mistake.
Really?
Something, yeah.
Possibly, again, I'll do it off, possibly fixing a hole, but...
What?
Do we really want to do that?
No, mistakes are good.
I don't know. Well, Rachel Burden, again, she was talking about the Strawberry Fields mix, and she says she knows where that edit is, but she doesn't want to know. She just, because it ruined the song.
But this mistake doesn't ruin the album. It's become part of it. It's like somebody you love who has a birthmark.
Mm.
Is a birthmark a mistake? No, it's not a mistake. A birthmark's a great thing. It's a wonderful thing. It's a beautiful thing. I think this is what it is.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a fault, a fantastic fault. We all have faults. This is a fantastic fault on a perfect work of art, and it makes it even more perfect.
I wonder if there's a flaw. Thing is, they had a few years ago all the... I think it was when the Rock Band game came out and people on the internet were sort of isolating all the tracks. And you hear there's a lot of mistakes, but somehow together you're so used to having the overall sound.
Yeah.
But when you hear them separately, some of them kind of jump out a bit at you. But
we've heard it so often, we don't know it's a mistake.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
For us, it has become integral to our Sgt. Pepper listening experience. Mm.
I guess for Giles, it's a different, taking it apart.
It wasn't a problem for Giles. He just said, every time, I just heard it, I kept hearing it and hearing it, and every time I was listening through.
Well, you're interviewing him soon, aren't you?
Yeah.
Ask him.
He's not going to tell me.
Isn't he? Just say, please.
Are you intrigued?
I am. Please ask him. Because you're interviewing him, hopefully this podcast will be out before.
I thought, is this podcast not going to be here forever?
It will be here forever, but we can reminisce. If you're listening to it now... Actually, no, that's not the work, is it? Whenever you listen to it, it's going to be now. When we're recording this, the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road hasn't yet been released, but it will be end of this month. But you're doing...
And we're recording this, by the way, in a flat in Salford, and things are... It's so windy here,
it
right?
It is.
Is this okay? Going to be all right?
It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Atmospheric.
It is.
It's like a floor on Sgt. Pepper, right?
But no, don't tell anybody where it is.
I don't know where it is. Oh, where my flat
is. Where the wind is.
Don't tell anyone where my flat is. I'll have apple scruffs everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
I just love that thing that there's a mistake on Sgt. Pepper that only very few people know about.
Yeah.
Your brain is really ticking.
As I say, if you listen to all of the multi-tracks, if you're really sad...
Well, you can hear it in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Have you listened to the multi-tracks?
Fixing a hole. Yeah.
What happens in Fixing a Hole?
There's a few chords that are out with where the melody should be, where the chords were going.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't go that way, but I wouldn't have thought it was that obvious.
Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad.
Yeah.
It's all a part of life.
It is. That's a deeper
statement. It's Crackerbox Palace.
It is.
I met a Mr. Greif. So it's a strange name to put in the song, isn't it, Mr. Greif?
It is. Sudden. You're limited with rhymes as well on that one. Unless, well, there's Stife Teddy Bears, I think.
Yeah.
Wife, Strife. Yeah, you don't want to go down that.
What's that line in Badge about rhymes table with Mabel?
Yeah.
A girl called, everything book on the table, and then there's a line, yeah. I can't remember, there's a girl called Mabel.
That's all right.
It's
that's
not his right. best. Cole Porter could teach him a thing or two there. In olden times, a glimpse of stocking was really considered shocking. Now, heaven knows, anything goes. That's a lyric. Sorry?
We end with possibly my favourite song on the album, but Learning How to Love You.
It's a great ballad, isn't it? Mm. And I looked on iTunes expecting there to have been a slew of covers, and I could only find two covers, and they were by, with every respect, minor artists, people I'd never heard of, who just had kind of done an album. Mm. Much like I have, people have never heard of, you know, in terms of in music. And they were kind of okay versions. It's nice yeah. hearing it sung by a female, but I would have thought that it would have been covered by other people as well.
Yeah. This is, I think George described this song as the best thing he composed since Something. And I would, I can't disagree with that. I would say this is probably one of the best songs he's ever written. And no one's heard it.
I know. There will be people listening to this podcast right now who have never heard Learning How to Love You, but who love the Beatles and George Harrison. And they're on the verge of discovering something really quite wonderful. Mm. Something with which they will fall in love and will be with them for the rest of their lives. Theory as to why it didn't become as big as Something, not just the fact that it wasn't on a Beatles album. Imagine if it had been on a Beatles album, how it would have been produced.
Yeah.
Because that's nice, you know, the chorus is beautiful. And the middle eight is beautiful as well. But think about the middle eight on Something, for example.
Yeah.
Boom! Drama.
Yeah.
It really socks it to you. And I was thinking to this song, because it's as gentle as the verse of Something, but I was thinking of this song in terms of having that production, and I think that production and arrangement, as far as it goes, it's never going to be, you're asking me, my love, and I know. It's not going to be that.
Yeah.
But they could have lifted it a little bit, and I think it would have been more readily, that, you know, that grabs me. I want to sing that. That's a Beatles song. And I think if they'd done it with the Beatles, it would have been like that. Do you agree with me?
Definitely. Again, we were going through the Beatles for Sale the other day. The one thing that Ringo really brought to the band was drama. As you say, the drum roll, they're kind of drum rolls, aren't they, during the, you're asking me? It just suddenly, it's back of the hair sort of drama.
Jang, 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 boom.
Yeah. But it's Ringo, Paul, you know, it's just the Beatles. It's not, you know, there's a full professional band of musicians here, like top quality musicians. You know, the Beatles were good musicians, but these are like proper session. And they never quite achieved the drama that the Beatles did. Because how could they? You know, that they were best friends, they'd been through everything. And they knew instinctively, yeah, here we go, here we go, here we go. And it would just happen instinctively. And I can think maybe Live and Let Die. I can't think of that many solo Beatles songs.
With the drama.
With the drama that the Beatles could effortlessly create.
This would have had the drama, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
because they would have said, why don't we do this in the chorus? Why don't, and you can hear that, you imagine their backing vocals. Mm. We could have lifted this middle eight, or chorus, it's the chorus, it's the middle eight I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know.
The middle eighty chorus.
Yeah.
That we could have lifted that, yeah. And then the song would have had the highs and the low, the musical lows, the musical highs, I mean lows in a good way. Mm. It would have had the soft, it would have had the loud and the soft and the contrasts and the drama and the soft drama and the loud drama, and I'm wabbling, I'm saying too much and I'm not making any sense, but hopefully somebody somewhere knows what I mean. But it's lovely, a really lovely song.
Mm.
But that is the whole thing about reimagining these songs as Beatles songs. And I think there's, for me, there's three songs on this album, 33 and a third, that I can send through the time tunnel back to the 60s. I can send it to 67, 68, 69, 70, and these songs would have graced, these three songs, Crackerbox Palace, See Yourself, and Learning How to Love You.
Yeah.
That they would have graced any Beatles album with Beatles around him, with Beatles production, with that magical Beatles feel and touch and transcendent magic. They would have been songs that we will, and people will talk about forever. So they deserve to be listened to. They deserve to be appreciated. And all in all, this is a wonderful record. And I'm so pleased I was able to talk about it. It came to me in a flash. I thought, oh, maybe I'll talk about With the Beatles. Or maybe I'll talk about Revolver. And I thought, 33 and a third, because there's so many good talking points here. Absolutely. And I commend it to the house. I commend my budget to the house. So I've been too much of that recently.
Yeah, let's not go down that avenue. Nicky, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate that. And I think, again, as you're saying, if anybody hasn't heard this, go in with neutral ears and just enjoy George enjoying himself. I think you, before we did this, you were saying Joie de Vivre. That's kind of the George that we have on this album.
His eyes are shining brightly. It's got wit, it's got sparkle, it's got joie de vivre, joie de verve. It's, apart from the racing car, va-va-voom, brum-brum, it's great. And the context of it coming out of the myriad miseries of Extra Texture, not without charm, not without good songs, Extra Texture, but depressing. He was depressed and we were depressed listening to it because we thought, this ain't George. And then this comes out and you think, everything's all right with the world, George is back.
Yeah, that's a lovely ending, nice positive ending. Nicky Campbell, thank you so much for your time, I really appreciate it.
I loved it.